So just before I get Ray up here, for all of us to meet him, I want to give you a tiny little bit of backstory in terms of what was going on in my spirit that when this started to unfold, because this felt like a really lovely thing already to this point. But I'm the only one in the community who's kind of gotten to be in on all of it, and along with John Jansen, who's kind of quarterbacked this whole meeting and been the guy who brought us together. So that's been really neat. One of the things that I mentioned in the blurb that just keeps stirring in my spirit is how easy it is for us to lose our grip on a bigger perspective. Because life is absorbing, right? It makes its demands. We choose things. We try to choose good things to put into our life and to do. But we start doing them and realize, oh my goodness, like the docket's full. You know, the life is full to the edges. And even when I think, I want to get my head up, I want to look around, I want to be involved in a wider world, all of this kind of stuff, we kind of like, oh, that was a good thought. Yeah, gotta go. You know, because that's kind of how it unfolds. And so as a community, I think that same tendency can be true, right? We can become just this inward-looking, about our business collectively when we gather. And hopefully our business is good, and we're doing things that are worthwhile, and we're having conversations that we need to be having, and there's fruit from all of that. That's great as far as it goes. But it can go not far enough really easily. And so I think we're at a stage in our kind of shared story as a community where it's really time and more than time for us to do the next deliberate thing that gets us looking up and around at a wider world thoughtfully and saying, what does it look like to collectively engage in that? And I use the word collective in the email really deliberately, because I know there are lots of people in this community that are engaged that way. So I wanted the email, you can't say everything, right? It's supposed to be short. I love sidebars. But what I would have said had I taken the space is, I know there are many people in the community that are engaged in that way of thinking, in that way of living, and that's fabulous. And we need to do something collective that has that character about it. So this may be part of that. And with that as enough backstory, I want to invite Ray up here. Switch to this thing.
Okay.
All right. Sorry, Ray. I know we talked about it, but... So, Ray, first of all, because you've been... When we first met, you introduced yourself to me, and you said, my name is, and I'm not going to try that. I'm going to just let you do it. And you said, and you can call me Ray, which I've been enjoying very much ever since. What's your name, Ray? What's your actual name?
Okay, My actual name is Wurayai Pukeni. So my first name is Wurayai, and then my last name is Pukeni. That's quite a very difficult name. I really understand that people want to call me with my name, but I know sometimes it can be really hard. So please feel free to call me Pukeni or call me Ray. That's okay.
Yeah. I just went straight to Ray. One syllable. That's it. And thank you, Ray. Well, see... And part of the reason I wanted to ask you that question is because my sense is that you would answer it sort of the way you did, which is with the kind of grace of spirit that that in my experiences with you is true to you. And it's one of the things that that has made this such an attractive conversation for me. So thank you for letting us call you by the name we can manage. That's very kind. Could you tell us a little bit about, Ray, about where you grew up and how you came to be in this country? So just kind of the short version of your autobiography, of your own story, and what brought you here.
Well, I am from Zimbabwe. So Zimbabwe is right down in southern Africa. I know that for an average North American, Africa is a country. But, well, I'm from Zimbabwe, which is further down south, close to South Africa, Zambia, Botswana, and Mozambique. So I grew up in a village, so I never got a chance to grow up in the city as a young kid. All my life, I think, until university, I was just in the rural areas, right in the villages of Mwenezi district. So Mwenezi district, so Zimbabwe is further down, which is hot and dry. Mwenezi district is actually down south of the southern Zimbabwe. So it's even very, very hot and very, very dry. I mean, you can find the baobab trees, you can find elephants, you can find giraffes, just to to help you understand the kind of climatic conditions, because those animals really love warm weather, so that's where I come from. And for coming to Canada, I mean, I'm sure you're all thinking, like, so how do you come out of that remote and very, I mean, dry village, and then all of a sudden, zoom, you're in Canada? So, well, it was because of the fact that I had opportunities to connect with people who were coming from here in Canada and who really, really thought that I could really, you know, change or maybe find my stars. I could change my star. So people really loved the way I was working with my community, the way I was trying to contribute to a good cause in my community, even though I had nothing. So through that kind of work and collective engagement with others, they thought they could invite me to come to Canada. So that was my first time to be able to fly in an aeroplane and also to come to a civilized city and probably see many people who look like you. It was just a shock, but it was a good thing. So that's how it happened.
What time of year was that, Ray?
Well, for some reason, things happen in winter. I don't know why, but that is exactly what happened. I got here in winter. Winter was almost coming to an end, but it was really pretty cold. And I remember telling Tim that when I was at the airport in Toronto, I missed my flight. So the flight was cancelled because of bad weather, and I could not even imagine, because Zimbabwe is such a small country, so you can drive across the country in 8 hours. So I couldn't even imagine how far Winnipeg was from Toronto, and I wanted to be this smart new immigrant coming from Africa, and I just went to the flight attendant and said, hey, can you just help me get something like a bus or a cab, whatever, so I can drive to Winnipeg from Toronto. So that's when I started realizing that things don't work that way. And it was really cold, and I didn't have a jacket. I mean, traditionally in my culture, if you are a man, you should be able to brave the weather. You should go out without a shirt. So when they told me that it was cold, I said, I am a man, you know.
So, I am a dead man. But I'm a man. For what it's worth, Ray, if you just go by any junior high in January, you'll see boys who are trying to be that kind of man. It's here, too. I don't know. Maybe it's in our genes. Anyhow. So tell us a little bit about the vision that you have for the project you're involved in now that you and I have been talking about.
Yeah.
It kind of connects something unique about this country in terms of a resource to a situation in the village and region where you grew up. So tell us a little bit about how that came to be a vision and passion for you, and what the project is that we're going to talk about together.
Okay, thanks. I think one of the things that I would like to share with the church today is that, to begin with, I really love your name, Tebo, like the Tebo Church, Tebo. So when I think of a table, I think of a community where people sit around together, probably to eat or to share ideas. I don't know how the church name came about, but this is maybe a good thing for you, because you are getting it firsthand from a person who just saw the name of the church and has no idea how that church operates. To me, that's a lovely principle. So here is what I'm going to put on the table. Growing up in a family that is struggling, just even afford a meal a day, is just a huge challenge. That calls for innovation, that calls for resilience. It's difficult. You have very limited choices to what you can eat, to the information that you can get on how to improve your life. I grew up in a very remote village. So if there was anything, like let's say a flood coming, we would always be the last to know about the flood, because we are so in a so, so remote area. If there was an outbreak of a disease coming, we would always be the last to know about that outbreak of a disease coming. So these are the kind of conditions that I grew up in. And then trying to work on the land produce food for ourselves was our daily, that was our daily business. And then, because of the fact that we cannot access any information, it was always a challenge year after year on how we can get agriculture inputs. It was a challenge year after year on how we can reach out to the agriculture extension workers who can give us information on what to do in order for us to produce more. It was year after year on how we could even, you know, plan our farming, because we had no idea about when we should expect the rains. Everything was always like, you know, you wake up one morning and things have just changed all of a sudden. You can't cross the river because it's flooded, and that's your livelihood. You have to cross the river and forage for food in the forest. You have to look for insects. You have to, you know, find tree bugs to eat. This is what I grew up eating. And I'm happy that my friend Dan is here, who came to visit Zimbabwe in 2006, I think, and had an opportunity to interact with me right in my province where I come from. So these are the struggles that I grew up with. And every day, my desire and my prayer, because my mother just taught me that, you know, God will give you everything you want. You have to ask from God. And when I think of it, you know, I see that it was a good thing that my mother taught me that way, because she had nothing to give me. But I still was supposed to have hope. So where would I get that hope? In God. So because she told me God can do anything for you, I would always think, when are we going to get a break from this? How can I make a difference? And for you to really see how helpless the situation is or was, all the other players, development organizations coming to this area, were no longer thinking in terms of long-term plans. They were thinking of, what can we do now? So every time they will come and just talk about, what can we do now? So I grew up really, really, you know, thinking hard about how I could be able to help other people around me. And to be honest with you, one of the things was, do really poor people know how to make decisions about how to improve their lives? I've had a lot of conversations, some that are mind-boggling and some that are really helpful. But I've had somebody who is very skeptical who said, no, poor people are just poor because they cannot think creatively. They cannot turn around the deck of cards. They always, you know, think it can never be turned, and they stay in there, they get stuck in their poverty, and they can't think any further. That is how somebody, you know, pitched it up to me. But hey, poor people can make decisions, good decisions. My mother is not even a grade one, not even a kindergarten level, but here I am in front of you. So was she not making good decisions? She was. So what lacks for poor people is opportunity, access to information, and choice. If they could get opportunity, if they could get access to information, they could make good choices. So this is one thing that I really feel passionately about in terms of, you know, what could be done to change the world. So before people can think about giving people food, before people can think about giving people tools and seeds, they should think about, how best can we make sure that people can access right information at the right time so that they can have choices to use all these resources productively? That's number one. So when I came to Canada, this should be a message of hope. So don't feel depressed. This is a message of hope, because we are all together in this. When I came to Canada, my friend's wife, Susan, told me that, hey, Pugeni, I got a job in Churchill. Oh, great, up north. So how are you going to go there? I'll fly. It's only 2 hours. I'm thinking, oh, good for you. In my village, I mean, you can't fly to my village. So I'm thinking, okay, she is going to Churchill with information. She will talk to those communities and help them improve their lives. Okay, what about my village? How can you and me partner together to help deliver that information to this community in a very cost-effective and sustainable way, so that those poor people down there can make choices informed by very good knowledge that is accurate and on time? So this is how I started thinking about these things. And for me, yeah, because for me to be where I am, I made choices based on knowledge that I received from friends and from those people who motivated me to be where I am today. And I think that is where I got the greatest motivation. So just to hone in precisely into the project. So here is an example of what I think. So, and it's also based on what I have lived here in this privileged country. So when I was late to work one day, I went to my supervisor and said, hey, I'm late. And he's like, oh, you should have told me. And I said, why is it that I always forget to tell my boss that I will be late? And I looked back and I discovered, well, when I grew up in the village, I had no phone. So even though I have a phone in the pocket, it's easy for me to forget that I have a phone in the pocket because I grew up without a phone. And then for my boss, he just can't understand. Like, man, you have a phone in your pocket. Just send a message. You get what I mean? And then the other thing was when I was standing at the bus stop, well, so I explained to him, well, I was at the bus stop and the bus didn't come and then, oh, 20 minutes and then 25 minutes and I'm late. Oh, well, if you look right there, there's a number, you can just phone the number and then immediately, you know, there's an automated voice recording that tells you when the bus will come. Wow. Now I get it. So, for my people, I'm thinking we could do the same thing. We could harness mobile technology to reach out to pregnant mothers, to know what to do when they have labor pains, to reach out to farmers, to know when to expect the rains. And this is something that will be cost effective. This is something that doesn't require, because farmers, I mean, like mobile technology is already in Africa. Like many people have phones now, even in the remote, in my own community where it's so remote, over 60% of the people have phones. So isn't this an opportunity for us to provide that knowledge on time so that people can make those choices? So this is just an example of one of the many ways that we can use the way we live here in Canada to influence the way other people live elsewhere in a very positive way.
Okay, did you see what got me? All right, awesome. By the way, this is probably also the gentlest, most oblique lecture on post-colonial imagination that you're going to be in for a long time. If any of you are kind of university educated and you kind of got that thing running in your head, pay attention, because... All right. What can we do together? Right? What does this look like?
That is the hardest question, because I look at you as people with a lot of resources to give here. You have. And I'm not talking of financial resources. The knowledge, the skill, the networks, you know, research. You are able to sit down on your computer, have your coffee, go online, grab a document, read it, you know, come to Tim and say, Tim, maybe we can improve this idea this way. That to me is a lot of money. That's valueless. It's just so much money. So the first stage is that we have to, I'm looking for people who can help me develop this idea. How do we develop it? We want to start it small, for sure. We want to try it. And then we want to see if we can help this idea grow. I know that a lot of people, if I may just say this, a lot of people in international development work are kind of skeptical about projects that bring in the private sector. They always think, well, Bukeni is talking about a mobile phone and poor people and, you know, so how will this work out? But the truth of the matter is, if you look at the adoption rates of mobile phones in Africa, there's very good evidence that those phones are working for the poor. Yeah. That's why people have them in their pockets. If they were not working, people were not going to make a choice and buy the phone. Number two, our job is not to give them the phones. Our job is to work through what they already have. I think there's a lot of dignity there for you to get to a community and say, wow, I can still have a phone. These are basic Nokia phones. I mean, no smartphones, forget it. Just basic Nokia phones. We can see you have got a smartphone. I mean, a Nokia phone, a basic one. And we want to work together using what you have and what we can provide. And maybe it's just as simple as sending a text message to say, next week, your area is going to be receiving rain, some rain, and prepare to farm. Maybe it's just as simple as sending a text message to say, traders are coming to buy food, to buy crop produce on this particular day. Put your things together. Maybe it's just a small text message to say, there will be a cholera outbreak. Make sure to wash your hands and don't greet everybody. It makes a big difference. A big, big difference. And here is a real example that I can use that is very, I think you have all read about this one. Ebola. Right. When you think of Ebola, if you had, or if the World Health Organization had a platform like the one that I'm talking about, man, it was just going to be so as easy as sending a message every 2 hours to say, don't greet your neighbor, wash your hands, stay away from this, you know? And those prompts, you know, as soon as people receive them, number one, it's knowledge. Number two, choice. Number three, self-determination. Now you have it. You looked at it on your phone, and man, I'm not calling you to come for the meeting. You are in your house. It's a lot of relief for pregnant and nursing mothers who are carrying babies walking 10 kilometers just to get to the health clinic, where more often than not, they will find the health nurse on leave. Because there's no communication. They walk 10 kilometers to get just a small message about how to breastfeed a baby, and then they find the nurse is not there, and they have to walk back again, and they have to walk again. And all these things, when I look at them, I'm not saying, I mean, things are not working, but I'm just saying these traditional methods of passing knowledge can be improved. And how about, what happens when I tell you, when you are visiting me and I give you my address on your phone? So you say, Pugemi, I want to visit your house next week. And I'm like, oh, I live on number 23 Baylor Avenue. So next week on Monday, 10 minutes before you leave home, you go in your phone and check for the address. Yeah, those poor farmers can also go in their phone and refer to the message. You don't have to be there to be always telling them to come under a tree, walk long distances, spend all their 10 hours sitting down there. We can do it. This is where I think you guys can be able to make, I want to call it a revolution. This is where I think you guys can be able to make a big difference in this remote community where people have poor road networks. And just as an example, the extension, agriculture extension officers farmer ratio is 1:1,500. So one extension officer has to reach out to 1,500 farmers. And just yesterday I spoke to my mother and I said, Mom, next month it will be the rain season. Are you ready for it? Yeah, she said. Good. So how did you receive agriculture information? Because I'm interested in this. The chief called us to a meeting. The chief? So where did the chief get the information? The chief is not even an agriculture extension worker. Where did the chief get the agriculture? Oh, by the way, the chief is the only one with the radio. So the chief was listening to the radio and he heard this message and he called a big meeting to tell people that the rains are coming, you know? It's good, but just imagine how that information can be distorted. Just imagine how a lot of people are walking long distances to come and just get this message from the chief. And who knows, you know, who knows what was said on the radio. So this is why I really think you and I can contribute. Where I think this would be more exciting. So this is just the basic. Where it would be more exciting. If people here have knowledge or connections or abilities to develop an app, because the situation is going to change. People will start having smartphones. These phones should be used
Like as soon as these phones have more value to the users through the information they provide, people will enjoy buying more phones. And you are not buying the people phones. People are making choices to buy phones. And maybe we might end up developing an app. Right? So we start by sending these free text messages with information, and then the next stage, maybe we are developing an app that is providing real-time information to people. These are all possibilities.
I love hanging out with visionary people. I'm just, so, Ray, this is awesome. Thank you. This is so exciting. God, there's a thing about vision, and you've just done, in my opinion, a most remarkable job of creating a bunch of pictures of possibility for us this morning that are imaginable. They're not like, you know, next week nobody's going to be hungry anymore. They're actually steps in between here and there, which I think is really important. If I remember some of our earlier conversations correctly, there's a very concrete step that's kind of right in front of us in terms of timeline that we can help facilitate to get some of this moving initially. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So what I did with this, and to be honest, this is the first time that I have shared about this to a group of people, because this is a true reflection of my personal story. I just feel like if I were to give it a topic, I would just say, like, probably I would say fighting with the dragon, because these are the things that live in me, in the good that I see in you and that I see around me. So if I eat yogurt, he knows that. Dad, do you know that for the past 30 years I never ate yogurt? It's something to me. To you guys, it's yogurt. Sometimes I feel like I'm messed up because everything is kind of a shock and a surprise. Right? But honestly speaking, sometimes I wish I can give you my eyes so you could see the world through me, because I've seen it in the village, I've seen it here, and I've compared, I've contrasted, and maybe I've concluded in ways that I'm not even sharing with anyone. But the truth is, I shared this vision with Tim and JJ, and I really felt so good. I felt, for the first time ever, I can talk about my life, and I can talk about how I think we can make a difference, and it's such a big relief. So what I've done is that I applied for a small grant through MCIC, and they told me, well, for you to receive this money, you need to have a sponsoring organization. And this could be a church. And that is the first step. It's not a lot of money, but it will help us start setting up things. In terms of what I have done back home, I spoke to all the stakeholders in my community about my interest to do this kind of work, and they've given me permission to go ahead. So I have a signed memorandum of understanding with the local authorities, and of course, I already have people on the ground who are kind of going to help us, you know, probably if we want to do a feasibility study, if you want to collect any data, if you want to implement the project, there are people on the ground who are ready and are willing to work. So the deadline from MCIC is the 30th of October. So if I don't give them the contacts for a church that can receive the grant on my behalf, then the 30th of October, I will lose it. Here is another thing that Tim did not ask that I will tell you about, your contribution. So because churches are already there, the Temple Church is here, if you decide today that, oh yeah, we want, this is an exciting idea, one of the major contributions is that you would be looking after the finances. Like, because the reason why I thought of this, Tim, is there's no point for me to start opening another bank account. I already have people who have the knowledge and who are tried and tested. You have done this over years. So that would be another responsibility that I would be asking from you, to say, hey, you know, can you look after the finances? If I apply for funding from any other organization in Canada, Would you be happy if I say the Table Church is the custodian of this project? They will look after the finances, and they will make a follow-up and make sure that financial reports are submitted on time. So that would be another request. Because I don't really see the need for me to form another small committee and open a bank account, and which reflects the way I think. If you look at how I'm trying to set up this project, I'm actually setting it up on top of private sector, innovation. I'm not trying to go and make my own phone. I'm just sitting it, because resources are there. I believe we have enough to do this. So there's no need to create any new resources. We can use what we already have.
We as a community, we as a community can do what Ray is asking. This part of it is not rocket science in our cultural context. It's sitting there waiting for us to act on. It really is. We are a registered Canadian charity. We can broker the grant. We can receive the grant money and distribute it to Ray and the other parties that are working with him under his care. So essentially, we're a conduit for the grant money. And I think, I don't know if this number is accurate or not, Ray, but I think you said the initial grant is $5,000,
yeah.
Right? It's, I mean, even in terms of volume, this is, we're getting going.
Yeah.
But the numbers are not, if big numbers are alarming to you, the numbers aren't alarming. So it just feels like it has an organic nature to it, a relational nature to it, an approachability to it. That as soon as I heard the story, I felt like there were so many levels at which this was deeply congruent with, if not the lived reality of this community, then the things we aspire to. And that's just kept me fired up about this from the very first time we had a chance to meet and chat. What I want to invite us to do as a community, and we don't have a collective kind of decision-making process, right? This isn't about we're all going to go away and sleep on it and vote. There's a leadership team. The leadership team has discussed this. Everybody's on board. What I do want to do, and this is as close as we get to process around here, I think, in lots of ways, is invite the community to reflect on this for yourselves. You know how to reach me if you receive the weekly email. You can just reply to that email address. If you have any concerns that you want us to consider as a leadership group before we move forward with this, please let us know. If you want to cheer the leadership group on and support us sort of by saying something in support of that decision, because it's from within that team that most of the administration that Ray's talking about will happen at this point. There are people in that group who are already handling the finances of our community. They're the people who issue your tax receipts. Fire away, Jeremy.
I assume you've already looked at something like an SMS modem and how that would be. Do you have developers or even a development language in mind?
Thank you. There you go. You have lots to give to this. Listen to him. You are speaking the language I don't even understand. So you are part of the team.
I'm warning you, if you just walk close to Ray, this happens. So okay, just be advised.
Right. So there we go. He is part of the team.
SMS modem, what's your plan?
Okay, we're not going to discuss the plan right now, though, Jeremy. So okay. I'm gonna say something about this in a moment. We're going to wrap up this conversation, and Ray is going to hang around afterwards. We will make sure that we know how you can reach him as well, Jeremy, so you guys can have a technical conversation that none of the rest of us would understand at the same level, perhaps, or few of us, I should say.
Sorry, I'll just say one minute.
Fire away.
Okay, so just quickly, I know this question can be in you also, and I know people are thinking like, come on, Ray, what if there's no network? What are you going to do? This doesn't really seem to add up. Okay, if you go frontlinesms.com,
yeah.
It's an award-winning app, platform that was sponsored by Bill Gates. It will give you kind of information on how I really think of running this through, and it can support that without internet. So you download the app. Well, to download the app, you need internet connectivity. And as soon as it's on your laptop, you just need a working phone or a modem, and you can shoot out messages from anywhere, number one, quickly. Number two, in areas where there is no network, we have an We have something for that. A talking book. One thing that amused me when I came here was how the primary school kids have got a book that when you open the book and press a button, it reads for you.
Oh.
My mother didn't go to school, but I tell you, if she has a talking book, she will just open it and press the button and listen. We will make it in the indigenous language. You and I have power. I will translate it to my language. You will put it in English. Man, this is we are talking of big ideas here. This partnership can be award-winning in future. Why? Because we might talk of it as supporting agriculture. But in Zimbabwe, if a disaster was coming, don't you think they will approach us and say, can we use your platform to tell people to go into safe places? These are examples that are scalable, doable, and cost-effective. And they can be used in future. Businesses will approach us. We have got this product. Can we market it through this platform? There will be a lot of noise. We will need somebody to be responsible for maintaining discipline as we move along. So,
someday we're going to say we were there when Ray said this for this first time.
Yeah.
Awesome. Ray, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. All right.
Tim, I got a question.
Yeah, go ahead, Ray.
I'm just a little confused. I'm just wondering, are we acting as a conduit for the grant? In which case, that's all great. But I kind of wonder, are we not able to act as an additional source of funds for what Ray is working on? Is the vision for the leadership that we're going to funnel this grant money through? That I understand, but I think we've been looking for things to get involved in as a community, and I'm just wondering, is this the opportunity for us to give to this as well?
Yes and yes.
Bigger kingdom and just our little world here.
Yeah, yes and yes, Bernie. Yes, we are the conduit for the grant. No, we are not limited by that.
Okay.
Yeah, because we're a charity, we can give our collective money away however we want. Those are dollars that have been entrusted to us. We have to demonstrate what we've done with that.
Yeah.
That's sort of our fiscal responsibility and our legal responsibility, but that's not a very difficult thing to demonstrate. And we can legally be as sort of reckless as we wish with our resources within you know, the obvious legal limits. So, yeah, we can just dive in.
I got a quick question. Just thinking about how, once this is all set up, the way that it's going to continue operating, I mean, assuming you are able to, will be able to put a team together to kind of figure out how exactly this is going to work, there's probably going to need to be a couple people who are just ongoing to maintain it, mostly just to curate the information, I think. Once the system is set up, it sounds like it's pretty simple. You just update it. Are you looking at having someone do that full time, or are you looking at it being a volunteer type thing? Like, would there need to be someone hired, and should that person be based in a country with like just solid internet connection? Because really, you could run this from anywhere, right?
Yes.
What SMS? I can send an SMS from my computer. I don't even need any hardware. I can do it all online, web-based services. So.
Yep.
You know, you would run it from here, so would you just have like a one permanent employee just curating the information and sending it out from a country that has a solid internet connection, as opposed to worrying about finding a phone somewhere to plug in your thing to send your messages to?
I think it would be fair to say, these are awesome questions, you guys. Ray read the big book right when he said, inside this community are people who think about these things and know about them and have knowledge and can help equip another entire community to make good decisions and result in good actions. That's the vision that I was talking about. Awesome. I don't know. We don't know. That's further down the road, I think, than we are, although I'll bet if you and Ray talk after this, he'll have an answer of something that he imagined that pertains to that. Yeah?
That's true.
Okay. Okay.
The thinking process is never, I mean, I enjoy ideas and strong ideas for that matter, not just ideas. So if the church could be willing to engage actively on that, that would be really good. Because sometimes having the vision doesn't necessarily mean to say you're the best person to execute it. So there are lots of possibilities, and thanks for raising that up.
there's sort of a collective part to this, there's an individual part to this, there's a we can see it and touch it part to this, and there's a far away and we have to imagine it part to this. It's kind of got all these different aspects, right? And so what I wanted to do this morning, and I am going to kind of close this off, not because there won't be other good things that could be asked or talked about, but because this could go on for a considerable amount of time. And I want to honor our gathered time as well. So this is right now we're at 30,000 feet, you know, in what we've talked about this morning. We're kind of up here looking down on the big idea and going, wow, this could be fantastic. But we are doing that with Ray, who not only can do that bit, as you know and experienced this morning, so well, but who has lived the on-the-ground part of this and can imagine the linkages between the big idea and the minutia of this that actually turn it into a lived reality that makes a difference in people's and communities' lives. That's what I get excited about, among other things. So we're gonna close the conversation off in terms of this gathering this morning. But this is not the end of this conversation. It's the beginning of the conversation. If you have particular questions or concerns or affirmations that you want to email with